Let's come back. Fantastic, everyone. We are back up and running. Thank you to Chantel and our team for restoring our functionality. So if everyone could please take their seats, we're going to go ahead and get started. I would like to welcome our next guest, Russ Housley, who is chair of SSR2, who's going to give us an update on his recently on pause team.
Good morning. I'm Russ Housley. And I was asked to provide a brief explanation of where we are. So I've tried to put a few slides together to do that. Okay. This isn't doing. That's okay. As we go through these slides, I'd like you to think about whether our plans cover all of the necessary elements that you think the SSR2 review should cover, and whether this, as the material is presented, think about whether we have the focus that you think would be interesting to the community. So the agenda is where we are today, what our scopes and terms of reference are, where we are in our work and our timeline, and then outreach and your input is indeed sought. So the SSR2 team was reconvened in August after being on pause since October 2017. At our face-to-face meeting in August, we met in Washington and we welcomed 5 new members. We also had a bunch of people who had resigned in the interim. We selected new leadership. I was selected as the chair, and we have 3 vice chairs. We reviewed the work that had been completed up to the pause, and we updated our scope and terms of reference. We updated our work plan and are moving towards getting the substantive work done, and we do encourage community input throughout this process. So last month we sent a note to the board, the SOAC chairs, that contained the scope and terms of reference. Those are also available on our wiki. The URL on the slide will take you to that if you really want the details. The important thing is that this is totally in line with what's called for in Section 4.6C of the ICANN bylaws, which is the one that says the SSR will take place every 5 years, tells what we need to do. So that also includes the high-level milestones, the leadership responsibilities, the membership responsibilities, how we're going to make decisions and conduct our work, our commitment and plan for outreach is in there as well. And the last bullet on this slide shows a quote from the bylaws. I'm not going to read it, but we didn't feel we could remove any of those words. But the point is that's what we're going to do. So the work is basically broken down into 4 streams. The first 3 are things the bylaw says we must do, and the 4th one is something the bylaws say we may do. So the first one is that we have to review the recommendations from SSR1 and the implementations that were attempted and say whether they had the intended effect. So we're more than halfway through that. The another thing we need to do is look at ICANN's key security, stability, and resiliency activities, and that is one of the things that's on deck to for Wednesday, actually, to start doing more on that. We did a lot of data collection before the pause, but we'll be going through that. We also have to look at the SSR-related things of the domain name system, focusing on the things where ICANN contributes to or facilitates them. And then the thing we may do is look at future challenges. So we're hoping to do some of that, but we are trying to put forward a very aggressive schedule, but we think there's some things there that are useful to highlight. This is our very aggressive time schedule. Basically, before this meeting, as I said, we updated the scope, terms of reference, outreach plan, and so on. At this meeting, we're having face-to-face sessions of the review team, and we're doing engagement with the community. Between this meeting and COBE, we'll be gathering, assessing facts, and creating a draft report. In COBE, we expect to do presentations on that draft report, and immediately thereafter begin a 40-day public comment period. And then after COBE, the intent is to deal with whatever public comments come in on the report and produce the final report before the next meeting. Marrakesh. So your engagement is requested. This is a community review team. We want the community to help. There's a bunch of ways you can do that. You can send input to us directly with the email address that's up there. One warning, that is a publicly archived list. You can provide comments at engagement sessions, and you can become an observer if you wish. The SSI Secretariat can set you up to do that. And if you want to follow the work, the wiki is, of course, open and public as well. So thank you, and if you have any questions, I'll be glad to entertain them or pass them to one of the review team people who are in the room.
Great. Thank you so much. Any questions? All right. I think you might be off the hook. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it, and we're really thrilled to hear that you guys are back on this important work. So we are going to move to other areas of business. The first item on the agenda, I'm going to recognize Malcolm Huddy. Malcolm?
Thank you. My name is Malcolm Huddy. I'm a member of the ISPCP. I'm also a member of the IRP implementation oversight team. The IoT has been working on draft rules of procedure so that the IRP can get going under the new bylaws, the new accountability scheme post-transition. We've been doing that for some time now. The IoT has just put up draft rules of procedure, interim draft rules, supplementary rules of procedure for approval by the ICANN board on Thursday. Unfortunately, there's a problem with this. It relates to the deadline for filing. The deadline for filing has a complicated structure, but the effect of the way that it is, the way the clock starts running, is that if an action by ICANN is not implemented for 12 months, and therefore does not affect anyone for 12 months, that action or decision by ICANN will never be capable of being brought to the IRP for challenge for consistency with the ICANN bylaws at all. Now, the IoT has consulted on this specific issue twice, once in December 2016 and again in July and August of this year. The first time, the IoT proposed this rule as it's going forward. Each member of the CSG, that's the IPC, the BC, and the ISPCP, all wrote to protest that proposal and ask for it to be changed. So did the NCSG and the Registrar Stakeholder Group. It was then changed. And the second public consultation was on the basis of a rule that would not cause this problem. The ISPCP and the BC wrote in reply to that public consultation to welcome that change and ask for it not to be reverted. So did the NCSG and the Registrar Stakeholder Group. The interim rules, so-called, that have been put up by the IoT for approval on Thursday do the opposite of what was suggested in the consultation over the summer and that we welcomed. And if adopted, as I say, will ensure that actions are ICANN is potentially capable of immunizing itself from challenge in the IRP simply by not implementing, or because it's impossible to implement, or it wasn't able to implement things within a 12-month period. This is inconsistent with the ICANN bylaws in several respects. The ICANN bylaws specifically set out the purposes of the IRP to ensure that ICANN does not exceed the scope of its mission and maintains its otherwise complies with the Articles of Incorporation and bylaws, and that it is there to provide a mechanism for the resolution of disputes as an alternative to legal action in the civil courts of the United States or other jurisdiction, both of which purposes would be defeated by adopting a deadline that would enable ICANN to immunize certain board actions from IRP review. The bylaws also require that the rules of procedure comply with international arbitration norms and require that they be consistent with the purposes of the IRP. The bylaws also require that the rules of procedure ensure fundamental fairness and due process, and that sets out that the deadline for filing must be based on a date after the claimant becomes aware or reasonably should have become aware of the action or inaction giving rise to dispute, rather than being based on the date of the action or decision itself, as is included in this proposal. The IRP Implementation Oversight Team had engaged an independent counsel, Sidley Austin LLP, which has written to the IoT twice to advise of concerns that the deadline in the form proposed in the interim rules now before the board is not compatible in the bylaws. In June 24, 2017, they wrote, applying a strict 12-month limit to any IRP claim that commences at the time of the ICANN action or inaction and without regards to when the invalidity and material impact became known to the claimant is inconsistent with the bylaws and is inconsistent with the terms of Annex 7 of the CCWG report. If these interim rules are approved, it will fundamentally compromise the effectiveness of the IRP as an accountability mechanism within ICANN. I would like to propose that the CSG writes to the board setting out its concerns about the inconsistency of this particular provision of the interim rules with the bylaws and with the commitments made at transition. I'd be happy to take any questions on this that anyone has.
Greg's hand is up on this topic, I believe.
Yes, thank you. Greg Shatton, for the record, I was also a participant, or am also a participant in the IRP IoT, and I share Malcolm's concerns. I would add to his excellent overview summary that the reason the IRP IoT final recommendation that went up to the board looks the way it does is not really because of decisions within the IRP IoT, but rather because of a final markup by ICANN Legal, which essentially, as you could tell, overrode the better judgment, or at least the judgment, of the IRP IoT as a whole. ICANN wants repose. They want their decisions after a very short period of time to be immune from challenge in the IRP, and this is essentially like submarine patents, where you can, if you can hide something long enough, you're immunized, and can then do all kinds of dirty deeds. I'm not saying that ICANN wants to do dirty deeds, but what they want is basically to limit the reach of the IRP, and one of the essential jobs of the accountability workstream one was to put some teeth and some sensibility into the IRP beyond what it was before, which was a basically procedural challenge mechanism. So I think this is a way, now that the IRP is a way of actually challenging the substance of decisions, they want to put their decisions beyond challenge as quickly as possible, and that's inappropriate. And I would support this. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Greg. Any other questions or input? Oh, Dean, please.
This is just a question, and thank you very much for that thorough but disturbing report. Is there any thought about potentially also getting the GAC involved and whether the GAC could get consensus advice on this issue? I'm a newbie, so I don't know if that's possible, where it would be harder for the board to ignore it. Thank you.
I think the problem here is time. I mean, the even raising what is essentially a legal question with the GAC at any stage is a difficult thing. To do so off the, outside their scheduled agenda and within 2 days is not, I don't think, practical within these 2 days. If this is, ends up being approved and we have to go through the process of potentially reconsideration requests, maybe even an IRP challenge to the IRP rules of procedure, you know, if we get to that, then maybe. But I mean, this is on the consent agenda. This is not for discussion. Most of the board members have not even any idea that this is even listed. I've spoken to a couple of them and were surprised to know who I had spoken to about this issue before, and they were surprised to see that this was listed. So that's the level of awareness that we're dealing with here. And really what the effect of this letter would be to, I propose that we write to Shireen and say, raise these concerns so that he can say, this looks like it's a controversial thing that is not suitable for the consent agenda and it should be given further consideration.
Thank you so much. I agree.
Thank you. Wolf Ulrich?
Yeah, Wolf Ulrich, Norman speaking. Thank you very much. And well, that covers almost all. My question was also with regard to the process, or the follow-up process. Well, as it is on the, I understand, on the consent agenda, would it be possible to convince one of the board members close to us, well, to oppose to that point in the consent agenda? Because then it's not, usually from a procedural point of view, it's not taken on the consent agenda, but it's taken to the main agenda for voting.
I think we could certainly ask, for example, our NCPH representatives on the board, Matthew Shears and Avery Doria, to make that. But in order to ask them to do that, we can't really expect them to do that off their own bat. If we write to Shireen and I propose suggest that we copy our own representatives, that would give them the material with which to make that request. So I think the process for achieving that, Wolf Ulrich, would be to write a letter such as I'm suggesting.
Thank you. Steve Del Bianco?
Thanks. Just to weigh in to support Malcolm's view on this, the BC feels the exact same way. We have supported this notion of starting the clock from their knowledge of the concern, and we believe it is worth raising the idea of changing the way the board considers its agenda this week. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? We have one more agenda item on other areas of business, and I would like to, if we're done with that topic, I'd like to move on actually, back to Steve Del Bianco.
Sorry, just to conclude that topic, do we have agreement here? What is the process for actually signing that? Do we have an agreement here to authorize officers to sign that on behalf of a letter of that description on behalf of the CSG or their constituents?
I would suggest as a next step that you help put together a draft letter for the CSGXCOM to consider, and then hopefully that would be a next step, would be we'd
okay,
be able to adopt
I've
it.
I've written a draft letter, and I will share it, circulate it with you immediately afterwards.
Yes, there's a CSG private list that you can send it to.
I will send
it. Or if you want to send it to me, I'm happy to circulate it to XCOM, whichever you prefer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've actually sent it to you, Brian, just a little while ago, so you should have it.
Great, thank you. So we'll take that up as the next item. Steve Del Bianco?
For which agenda item, Brian? Fantastic. The BC met this morning to try to articulate what our approach should be. We said some things at the microphone yesterday, but our approach is really a three-part with respect to the EPDP and the Unified Access Model. We will continue to work hard. We believe our approach ought to be to continue to work hard in the PDP to press for legal natural person distinction, to press for geographic distinctions. We know it up against a significant barrier if it ever got to council, but we think we should press for that. With respect to reasonable access, we should press hard for a standardized form that they would all use. That's not unified, by the way. That's just simply standardized. And a timeline, 36, 24, whatever the hours is by which a reply needs to come back And if the reply isn't revealing the data, the reply would say, here's why we are not going to give it to you until you do X, or we're just not going to give it to you. So that was one part. That's the PDP strategy. That's a rather modest outcome of the PDP if you calculate out what it would take to get it approved at council. The second part of the strategy is, in parallel, pursue this notion that ICANN could step up to the plate to be the sole controller, taking all the risk, requiring the registrars to respond to central RDAP queries, because ICANN is stepping up to the responsibility of only having that query come from an accredited entity with legitimate reason and would log those transactions in accordance with the audit requirements of the Data Protection Board. That is what we went to the microphone to say yesterday. We support exploration of that. The contract parties support the exploration of it. But as I was just talking to Thomas Rickard, that it's the essential element there, the gating question, is whether ICANN can be a sole controller just for the purpose of a unified access. In that case, the registrar is simply a processor acting under contract and doesn't even require a PDP, if that can happen. And I believe it's worth exploring that, but we have got to return to our roots at managing the PDP process, because if we can't get that sole processor legal responsibility, then all the work we have to do has to be slogging it through the PDP. Now, while we're doing that, Brian, the third leg of the stool is that the next renewal of the temp spec would be an opportunity to ask the board to clarify three simple things about reasonable access, to clarify that it ought to have a standardized form, a minimum number of hours or days to respond, and a specific response. And in good faith, we can pursue that. I know every time we talk about modifying the temp spec, the contract parties go nuts on us, but if it's transparent and we discuss the fact that it's only that, parameters around reasonable access, everybody can calm down, and we ought to try to go in together and pursue that as a temporary spec modification at the next 90-day. So it's a three-part strategy: the EPDP, the unified access model as sole controller, and potentially modifying the temp spec at the first instance to get a standardized way with a minimum response time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions or comments on Steve's points on the EPDP? Diane?
Thank you, Steve, for that. That was really a thorough and very poignant analysis of what needs to happen. My question is coming back to you, and you and I have spoken about this, but to put on the record what you think is for step number two. You said we need to determine how to get around or resolve the issue of making ICANN the sole controller and the contracted parties the processor. And if you could break down the steps that you think are necessary to be able to answer those questions and put forth a resolution.
There is Article 4, 7, and 8, Article 24, 26, 28, 29 of the GDPR, and the Article 29 Working Party Opinions, and I'll send around a link to it. Brian King circulated the link, and maybe Brian could send it around now, where they lay out this scenario by which an entity is the sole controller and then hires a processor to process its payroll. And that processor processes the payroll as a processor under contract, and they are not a controller, they're not a joint controller. So I'm trying to lay out that we can see, I'm not a lawyer, I'm an engineer, and I can see on plain how it could work. But ICANN has to have bilateral private discussions with the Data Protection Board to determine whether they can come up with a scenario that it happens. And ICANN was unwilling to go do that with a lot of vigor till it had more of a community endorsement. Hence the purpose of yesterday's discussion at the microphone and the breakthrough of contract party endorsement of that exploration. So that exploration is probably not going to happen by us in this room. However, for those of you that are lawyers and know GDPR really well, please be creative and try to come up with a way to articulate that sole controller. Keep in mind, they're the sole controller only for the purpose of unified access to the non-public fields. They're joint controllers for the collection and processing that you're looking at in the PDP. That doesn't change. But for just the use of unified access, could they be the sole controller?
My question to you is, I'm a lawyer and a privacy professional. I know what the law is. I know exactly what you know the framework is. And my question to you is more of a how to make this happen within ICANN. You know, you just said that that we have the support now, the shown through the letter of the contracted parties yesterday, what was said that ICANN is ready to make the moves through the DPA. But the question is the fundamental process to bring it forward, because that seems to be the stumbling block, that Joran believes that he has to go and get DPA approval, which is not reasonable to think that the DPAs are going to take the time and give the official authority to give it its blessing, because that's not their role. Their role is not to give individual entities blessings. Their role is to just give overall oversight to implementation questions. So the question is, how do we take what we know from is the legally right answer, now the support of the contracted parties, to then actually make this happen?
I'm not going to be able to answer that, as I'm not the authority that you are. And yet, I did see that there are codes of conduct that would be necessary for the implementation of the solution. Codes of conduct according to the accreditation of those who are getting access. And codes of conduct do call for the Data Protection Board to give binding guidance on a code of conduct. It's in there. So they do react on the record if you give them the right package. So we need to understand what does that package need to look like and help ICANN to put that package together.
So from a procedural standpoint, your viewpoint and your experience in ICANN is that if we get that procedural package together, that we're going to be able to actually push this forward from a, through ICANN. I'm just trying to
feel like
it's a roadblock of the actual steps that are going to make it happen.
Fair point, because having watched you for several months in the PDP, we encounter nothing but roadblocks. This would not be a PDP process. This is not a policy question. It's ICANN exercising its contractual authority with registrars to meet its bylaws-driven mandates to comply with the law. So it's not a PDP process. It is truly this, what did Joran call it, a technical study group, technical support group, technical study group. And that technical study group is both legal and technical, right? The RDAP notion and the legal aspects. So that technical study group is where we need to put the best minds around this table to work, to dive into this document, the GDPR itself, and articulate a way that ICANN can be sole controller. I know you can figure out a way. Putting that in writing and getting it into the technical study group yesterday, do it right away, and org can act, well, in a top-down unilateral way because it is trying to pursue its obligation of exploring it. If it explores it, truly enough, the community is going to get involved in the accreditation aspects, how to manage the code of conduct, and there will be a role for the community. But right now, we are mostly just contributing individual insights on the technical and legal study group.
I have one more comment to say, that it seems to me that everybody is looking at this PDP, EDPD, to be the road forward and the answer, and Joran just expressed that we're waiting for this to happen. Now, I have heard also him commit that he wants not just from the EDPD to make policy recommendations, but to also make legal recommendations. And that, I think, is the hook, is that this is the opportunity now. If this EDPD goes forward with just a glossy policy recommendation and doesn't give actual practical implementation and legal recommendations and provide a legal framework recommendations, then it's not going to, we're not going to get through this temporary spec to a consensus that actually works into a functioning model. So I think we have to make the most of this opportunity with this in this EPDP to not just make policy recommendations, but to make practical implementation recommendations.
You may not want a dialogue here, but may I respond to that?
We have 2 minutes left, or we have 4 minutes left, sorry, and we have two other people in the queue. So could I maybe take the other people's questions, and then we'll see if there's time for you to circle back so we can hear from a couple other voices. Greg is first, and then Ann.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. And while the DPAs will give advice on an industry code of conduct or binding corporate rules, what they won't do is tell a corporation or an industry how to implement them. And that's really where outside counsel or inside counsel comes in handy, rather is critical. And my concern is that ICANN isn't fit for purpose to actually manage this, but to help make them fit for purpose, we need to advise them, because I think this goes back to the question I had for Joran, who kind of deflected it. that you know, between getting cramped advice about interpreting GDPR and about how to implement it, that they need help. And that part, that help won't come from the DPAs. It'll have to come from us. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Anne?
Anne Aikman-Scalise for the transcript. I think that, Drasik has gone to the mic several times to note that uniform access model is a subject of phase two of the EPDP work, but actually, and so from the standpoint of EPDP, we're not there yet, but I also agree with Steve Del Bianco that a parallel track is appropriate for ICANN.org, with the authority from the board to do so, to go to the enforcement board in the EU and talk about, if they are the sole controller from the standpoint of the RDAP and that protocol is adopted, then this is a practical solution that helps phase two of the EPDP, and it all has to be kind of managed in tandem, and that ICANN.org can make significant progress toward communities' demand for unified access model by approaching it as Article 40, if we can get a confirmation from EU Council, or they can, and that these things can operate in tandem while respecting the policy process, and it'd be good for everybody.
Great, thank you so much. We have 1 minute, Steve, if you wanted to make a statement.
Yeah, keep in mind that unified access doesn't necessarily require policy at all. It's not policy, it's contract enforcement. The PDP is necessary because even with UAM, you still need reasonable access for people that don't have credentials. So whether we get to the annex or not is an open question. If the PDP concludes we just need to put parameters around reasonable access and give all of this co-controller legal justification for the collection and processing, that is a major implementable, operational, deliverable. PDPs do all the time at ICANN. It just takes a long time, but it's a relatively modest deliverable in a PDP. And you don't have to get to the annex if ICANN is sole controller, because it doesn't need policy to support that sole controller role.
Just a reminder, if you haven't signed in, there is a sign-in sheet by Chantel. She would like to make sure that we collected attendance here. Brian.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. We are out of time for today. I appreciate everyone's participation, and we'll see you in our next meeting.